I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The DOJ, special counsel coming after Trump. We have a nightclub shooting, Natalie Winters. We have a hilarious light in the mood. All that's coming up on I'm Right. Everything's political now. Have you ever said those words? I hate that everything's political now. Why is everything political now? I've said those words a lot. A lot. I miss, you know what I miss? I miss football. I miss waking up on Sunday, little church with the fam, stopping at the grocery store on the way home, getting some burgers and dogs and chips and such, gathering around for the big game, maybe invite a buddy over, a couple beers, and watching football. I haven't watched football, professional football, in years now. Why? Got political. It sucks. I miss non-political movies. And if you're a young person, I want to explain something really quickly. I know you've only ever known a world where everything is political, but I'm only 41, and most of my life I have lived where things weren't political. I want you to believe me, hear me out here. If you're young, you won't realize this, but when I was a kid, most of my life, when I was in my 20s, you could actually get up in the morning and get ready for work and turn on ESPN. And it would just be sports. Isn't that wild? It would just be sports. Just highlights and look at this dunk. That world did exist. You would watch movies and you would have no idea the political leanings of the cast or the director or the writers or anything. It was just a good old movie. Most of the movies, that's kind of how they were. That was the world a while ago. We don't have that world anymore. And I miss it. Yeah, but we got to accept life as it is. But why don't we have that world anymore? Why? Well, we have to understand, and I know if you watch I'm Right every single night, you do understand this. We have to understand we are, one, dealing with communists. We're dealing with cultural Marxists. They're not, well, they're left. He's liberal. He's just a Democrat. No. You're dealing with religious zealots. Religious zealots. They worship the god of destruction and misery. That's what they do. They live to destroy. That's what the communist does. And because he lives to destroy, he ends up taking over things that would never occur to you to even protect. What do you mean they're going to take over Nickelodeon and put drag queens on the screen? What? Why would they do that? It wouldn't even occur to you. But we have to understand, because we're dealing with religious zealots, it would never occur to him to not take over Nickelodeon. Communism has to be for all, has to be for everybody. And so they inject politics, their religion, into everything. Maybe you're a devoutly religious person, maybe you're a Christian. Do you ever, as a Christian, do you ever set Jesus aside in your life? Hey, Jesus, sit this one out, all right? Hang on. Hey, Jesus, not today. Please, just sit over there. No, of course you don't. Well, if you think of the communist in that way, it'll help you understand why he does what he does. We had a little mass shooting over, I shouldn't say little mass shooting, any mass shooting's bad, right? A mass shooting in Colorado over the weekend. Some gay nightclub, people got shot, some dude walks in there. And immediately, Joe Biden puts out a press release and says, he even says in the press release, hey, we don't know what the motives are, but people have been attacking gay people for far too long. Immediately he goes into the gay stuff, and then immediately he calls for an assault weapons ban. And I thought about this, because again, if you're young, you won't remember this, but I'm telling you, it used to be this way. In the wake of something terrible, like a mass shooting, we didn't used to have politicians running to the microphone, getting on camera, and trying to make it political. In fact, if they had tried, there would have been all kind of public pushback, because when something terrible happens, something tragic happens, remember, that's a time to come together. That's when we have to come together and mourn. If your neighbor loses her husband, loses his wife, do you run over and knock on the door? Yeah, he was a jerk anyway. I'm glad he's gone. Of course not. You come over, you bring a meal. If they need comfort, you sit down with them, cry with them, pray with them. That's the human experience. We have to have time to mourn. But now, it has become simply the norm that every major Democrat in the country, whenever a mass shooting happens, immediately it's, hey, campaign team, all hands on deck. Nice, we got some dead people. Time to grab some guns, guys. With no thought at all to the country. They even took over, the communists in this country even took over the grieving process. And I hate Barack Obama for many, many, many reasons. I do. But I've told you this before. The thing I hate Obama for the most is Barack Obama is the one, because he's a vile street communist and always was, that's how he was raised. Barack Obama was the one who mainstreamed this stuff. For 8 years, every time there was a shooting, Obama would simply get up and say, grab the guns. Immediately he would make it political as president of the United States of America. He's the one who did this. Remember, this was Obama after the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school, or in a house of worship, or a movie theater, or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. And to actively do nothing is a decision as well.
50 people dead. 50 families heartbroken. Getting the phone call everyone dreads, right? You have someone you care about in your life. Maybe it's a spouse, mother, father, brother, sister. Maybe it's a child, God forbid. But we all think about it from time to time. What if you got that phone call? I've got my phone in my hands right now. What if I got that phone call during the show? Jesse, come home. There's been an accident. The phone call everyone dreads. 50 people just got that phone call right after that mass shooting. 50 people finding out someone they love is gone. The president immediately gets up and tries to grab guns with it. He's the one who mainstreamed this, but I want you to understand something. It wasn't always this way, and it's sick, and it's evil, and it's wrong. Pelosi came out. This stuff would have been widely rejected by the public 10 years ago, maybe 15. Pelosi comes out right away. Whether spouting dangerous rhetoric from cable news desks or openly bullying school children from the halls of power, MAGA Republicans are cruelly undermining the safety and well-being of our transgender community. Immediately, without hesitation, it's guns and, of course, those MAGA people. And let's switch gears here real quick and talk about those MAGA people. Because, well, special counsel now, courtesy of Merrick Garland.
The Department of Justice has long recognized that in certain extraordinary cases, it is in the public interest to appoint a special prosecutor to independently manage an investigation and prosecution. Based on recent developments, including the former president's announcement that he is a candidate for president in the next election, and the sitting president's stated intention to be a candidate as well, I have concluded that it is in the public interest to appoint a special counsel.
Oh, of course. Well, he just wants to do the right thing, except the special counsel he appointed is a far-left communist hack with actually a history of already using his power to attack people on the right. Donald Trump, I've been warning you about this for a long time. Maybe you're a big Trump fan. Maybe you got your Trump hat on right now as you watch. Donald Trump is in serious trouble. He is. Not because he did anything wrong. All these charges and things like that are ridiculous. Donald Trump is in very, very serious trouble because he's a system disruptor. He was really the first of our system disruptors. The guy who got up there and called out people you shouldn't call out, called out bad policies you shouldn't call out, and he made a bunch of very powerful enemies within the system, and now they're going to destroy the man. If the feds and his special counsel don't, New York very well may. No, it's bad news if you're a huge Trump fan. It's bad news for America, period. This is late stage Republic stuff, but that's what we are. You just simply find a target and you figure out how to take them down using all the power you have, DOJ, FBI, everything. It's a really, really ugly place to be as a country. Trump responded to all this.
I want to address the appalling announcement today by the egregiously corrupt Biden administration and their weaponized Department of Justice. Would you like me to talk about that? Larry, would you like me to talk about that? This horrendous abuse of power is the latest in a long series of witch hunts. The corrupt and highly political Justice Department just appointed a super radical left special counsel, better referred to as a special prosecutor, to start the process all over again. We thought it was just about dead.
This is what happens when you allow these people to take over all of your institutions. Because these people, when they take over institutions, they believe in using the power of the institution. Back to what we were talking about in the very beginning about them politicizing mass shootings. Well, it would never occur to the communists to not politicize a mass shooting. He doesn't care about people or humans or lives. So if he doesn't care about them, well, of course I will use this tragedy to gain more power for myself and strip my enemies of power. Same thing here. Did you really think they were going to fill up the FBI and the DOJ with a bunch of communist activists and not use that power? They don't think that way. You're dealing with religious zealots, and the sooner you accept that, the better off we'll be. We got a long show. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. The great Natalie Winters is going to join us next. Now, before we get to Natalie, let's get to something good. That was ugly. That was a lot of ugly. That was like The View level ugly. Let's get to something wonderful. Let's get to the fact that you can have air in your home that is so clean. Every time you get home from work or we're out running errands or wherever you go, you'll walk in your house and the inside of your home smells like nature does after a thunderstorm. That's why Eden Pure named its air purifiers the Thunderstorm. It is constantly cleaning the air in your home of viruses and mold. No filters to replace. It's cleaning your air at all times. My family's healthier. It's not just that my allergies are gone. We've never had such a clean bill of health over a year. I have six of these things now. I keep three at the studio, three at my home. They sell three packs for my viewers. Go to EdenPureDeals.com because they have a deal and Christmas is coming. You can get a three-pack for under $200. That's $200 off. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse is what gets you the deal. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
She's back again. The War Room co-host and executive editor of warroom.org, Natalie Winters. Okay, Natalie, the World Economic Forum. I know I'm one of these deranged conspiracy theorists who talks about it. Actually, DeSantis brought it up the other day.
I want to have the values not of Davos imposed on us, but of places like Destin and Dunedin, where I grew up. Things like the World Economic Forum, those policies are dead on arrival in the state of Florida. We are not going to go down that road.
Natalie, what is this World Economic Forum? Who are these crazy internet people who believe in this stuff?
I think the World Economic Forum is probably the largest existential threat to the American way of life that currently exists on the planet. I would say a close runner-up might be the Chinese Communist Party, but the CCP basically works in tandem with the World Economic Forum, so they're one and the same. But I think this really represents an unprecedented and really unparalleled level of concentration of ostensibly private and public enterprise working together to push an agenda, except the agenda that they're pushing is really, I mean, let's call it what it is, a Marxist far left agenda that really, I think, undermines every fundamental value that we as Americans cherish. And I think you can really use their own words. They say the quiet part out loud, to have them define who they are and what their motives are, right? They say that you will own nothing and you will be happy. And if you read some of the other literature, the ones that they don't delete or erase from their webpage because it's so radical, they do not believe in private property ownership. And they've admitted to using issues, whether it be COVID-19 or climate change, sort of as avenues to exploit, to push their far left social agenda. So I think what you see, like I said, is this unprecedented collusion between governments across the world, companies that are you know, way too woke to high heaven, using really every lever of society, every aspect of society, to push a Marxist social agenda that really, if it were to materialize, we'd be living in a world that I don't think any of us would recognize.
Okay, Natalie, well, that all sounds basically horrific, but
yeah. Thank you for having
who
me on
who are
the
they?
Show,
I mean, yes. Of course. That's why we bring you here. All right, well, but who are they? It's not a government,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're not dealing with a foreign government of some kind. Is this a non-profit? How do they have so much influence?
Well, that's what's so interesting, because technically the World Economic Forum is not a state, right? But Klaus Schwab, the head of it, seems to be at basically every governmental conference, event, whether it's the G20, COP27, he always seems to be rearing his ugly head at these sort of, whether it's the United Nations, the World Health Organization. Obviously, these are globalist groups that anything they say, we should do the direct opposite of. But the fact that Klaus Schwab is there is very interesting. But I think it goes to what I was speaking about before. The World Economic Forum is very systematic in how it sort of curates and picks out leaders in various countries, all the way from the G20, you know, more Western influential style countries, but also within China and even within developing countries in the third world like Africa. But they run a Young Global Leaders program, which, believe me, a lot of the people that you see on mainstream media networks, whether the talking heads or heads of state, that you probably can't bear because they're so ridiculously far left and support policies like digital identity tracking, social credit scores, carbon emission calculators, all of that crazy, crazy radical stuff. These are people who oftentimes have participated in this Young Global Leaders program at the World Economic Forum. So the World Economic Forum is very smart. I would say, you know, maliciously smart and nefarious in how they sort of curate this young talent to be brought up through various levels and levers of government to help implement their agenda. I'll give you a perfect example of this. The head of Joe Biden's sustainability initiative at the White House is an individual by the name of Betty Kremens. Again, someone, one of these shadowy figures that you probably have never heard of. You know, it's not a household name. But she's someone who worked for the World Economic Forum. She's someone who, for years, and she's now leading the supply chain task force at the Biden White House, but specifically through the paradigm of sustainability. And if anyone knows anything about Joe Biden and supply chains, they've been totally horrendous under him, right? From the issues with truckers to the fact that, you know, grocery stores, hospital PPE, right? We can't really get anything. And obviously inflation isn't helping with prices. So this is a perfect example of how these kind of WEF cronies exploit, whether it's sustainability or climate change, obviously negligent of any of the issues or concerns of actual American citizens, but use these issues like supply chains to push their far left radical agenda.
Should be noted, everyone, Klaus Schwab, born Germany, 1938, but that's neither here nor there. All right, I want to circle back to something you said in the beginning really quickly, Natalie, about you will own nothing and be happy. Okay, well, if you don't get to own anything, and I don't get to own anything, then who's supposed to own everything?
Well, I think that's the, I would say, million-dollar question, but I think in this case, it's a multi-trillion-dollar question. And I think the best answer to that are the people that I was talking about before, these sort of nebulous figures. I love the comparison of, you know, the federal government running your life. It's like the DMV. These people are incompetent bureaucrats. It's the socialist state at its finest, but also at its worst. But I think it's people who really adhere to the World Economic Forum's far left social agenda, the idea that COVID-19 and climate change give them grounds to tell you how to live your life, to tell you that, oh, well, you've, you know, emitted too much carbon dioxide in this quarter, so you don't get to eat steak anymore. I mean, that's seriously some of the policy propositions and proposals that you see coming from people who are affiliated with the WEF. Obviously, there's the household names, people like Bill Gates, who are, of course, coincidentally buying up massive amounts of American farmland right now. Again, I think that's a perfect example of how you see what should be coming from Bill Gates as an investment to make money with farmland. That's not the case. He's using it to push a social agenda. So that's sort of the interesting thing, is that while it is about money with these people, I think they care more about power and more about being able to dictate your life from the mountaintops of Davos, as opposed to, you know, your local lawmakers and elected officials, and really even the American president having any say. You know, I know it was Donald Trump who said, you know, we will not surrender to the false song of globalism. But that's essentially what you see going on here, a ceding of, I think, national sovereignty to groups like the World Economic Forum, who work in concert with the World Health Organization and the United Nations. And I think if the best evidence as to why this is such a nightmare, just look at COVID-19 and how they not only exploited it to push, obviously, this far left agenda, but just the actual incompetence in terms of, you know, stopping the spread, rolling out a vaccine, you name it. They're just incompetent. And of course, there's an element of malfeasance too. But these people are ideologically driven. And that's always really scary, because there's no substance to back up the policies that they push. It's just ideology. It's just talking points.
Yeah. All right, Natalie, we're switching gears, because actually I have some breaking news here. This is amazing stuff from Catherine Herridge at CBS.
Data from a laptop reported to belong to Biden could be crucial to the investigatory process. CBS News has obtained its data not through a third party or political operative, but directly from the source who told us they provided it to the FBI under subpoena. And we commissioned an independent forensic review to determine its authenticity. Senior investigative correspondent Catherine Herridge joins us now with what we found. Catherine, I'm very interested. Good morning.
Good morning, Tony. These House Republican investigations are coming, and that could be a challenge for the White House as we head into 2023 and 2024. The laptop data we had analyzed showed no evidence it was faked or tampered with.
Natalie, can you believe that? Hunter Biden had a laptop with all this criminal stuff on there. This is breaking news. If only I'd known.
I know. I love their reactions. Although I will say it is very convenient that they waited until after the midterms to do this, right? Of course. But again, they're confirming what we all know. Frankly, I've become numb now to all these various mainstream media outlets saying, oh, actually, the hard drive was right. And of course, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they bury it in like paragraph 17 of the article. But I think, you know, there's a lot of lawsuits going on right now, specifically coming from the AG. I believe it's in Louisiana. I'm inclined to say Kentucky. But going on to this kind of convergence, which is dovetails with what I was talking about before, right? These private and public companies, how the FBI colluded with Facebook, colluded with Twitter, to suppress this story and, you know, slap on the Russian disinformation label, because that's their sort of modus operandi. But I think that these lawsuits that are going on, a lot of these people are going to have to actually testify in person about the collusion that went on to suppress the story. I think that will yield some really interesting insight in terms of how this happened. But again, I think this is just the latest example about any time someone uses the word misinformation, disinformation, it's almost guaranteed that it's actually true.
Yeah, no doubt. Natalie Winters, go read all her stuff. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
And that's what's so frustrating for people like you and me, isn't it? That when a story comes out, You look into it. I know you do. I look into it. I don't just trust what one thing I read or one thing I hear, one thing I watch on TV. I look into it. Okay, well, what's going on? Is this true? What did they say about it? You look into it. And then the media won't. And eventually they will. You know, 2-3 years later, they'll look into it, but not right away. And then when they finally look into it, they'll act like it's breaking news. All right, enough. You know what sucks? What always sucked, I always thought about Christmas, getting socks. Was there anything worse than when you were a kid or even an adult and you would open up a package and you'd see socks? Who wants socks? I want electronics and toys and give me guns and stuff. I need MVGs, that's socks. That said, you really have been buying the wrong socks for people. And can you imagine you could buy socks for someone and actually they'd be excited about it? You have got to try these socks from Grip 6. I'm telling you right now, for the first time in your life, you have the opportunity to buy someone socks for Christmas and have them be thrilled. While you're there, while you're at grip6.com/Jesse buying the greatest socks ever, buy one of these wallets. You can get them with or without the loop. See my cards in there? You know what they're not doing? They're not falling out right now. Oh, look. All I have to do is squeeze and they all pop up. You think the guy in your life would enjoy a little gadget like that for his cards and ID and stuff like that? This place is sick. Go to grip6.com/Jesse, all right? We'll be back. What is it with Elon Musk and Trump and Twitter and all this stuff? I don't understand all this controversy. Joining me now, my friend Alan Bakari, Breitbart News senior technology correspondent. Okay, Alan, let's start with Elon first, and we'll get to all the Elon Trump thing. I'm not a big billionaire worshiper guy. It's not my thing, but sounds like he wants some free speech. He bought Twitter. What's he done since he got there?
He certainly lived up to that promise. He's reinstating conservative accounts left, right, and center. The biggest one being Donald Trump. He has said he won't bring Alex Jones back on the platform because of his Sandy Hook comments. I think it's more to do with pressure from advertisers and the potential for Twitter to get kicked off the Google and Apple app stores. And that's the real thing that's going to constrain Musk from reinstating absolutely everyone. It's something that Yoel Roth, who was briefly the top censor at Twitter before he resigned, shortly after Musk took over, he wrote an article for the New York Times last week explaining that, you know, Elon Musk doesn't really get to call the shots because he still has to deal with advertisers. He'll pull out if there's too much content they don't like on the platform. And government regulators, the EU has threatened to crack down if Musk brings too much free speech back to the platform. And ultimately, the app stores owned by Google and Apple, that represents 99% of the worldwide smartphone market. So if it gets kicked off the app stores, then it's very difficult for Twitter to actually reach consumers. And, you know, that could really cripple the platform. So he still has to walk a fine line between all these interests who aren't really in favor of free speech and will crack down if he goes too far.
Okay, what's he done so far? It seems like he's fired about 1,000 people a day. Why?
Well, actually, this is what a lot of tech companies are doing, not just Twitter. Facebook recently laid off around 11,000 of its employees. There's a huge downturn in the tech industry and across the economy, thanks to Joe Biden. But you know, what Twitter's doing is not exactly unusual. And the other thing, you know, Musk needs to cut costs because a lot of advertisers have already pulled out. So he needs to make up that revenue somehow. He also tried to do the paid verification system that didn't work out. But slashing all those employees will definitely cut costs for Twitter. I think that's what it's mainly about. Also, it's about, you know, making sure that the remaining employees align with the vision of restoring some measure of free speech, because obviously that wasn't very popular among many Twitter employees. I think, you know, they might, like much of Silicon Valley, they leaned hard to the left and were totally on board with the lurch towards censorship that happened over the past half decade.
Okay, what do we know about the people that are gone? You brought up this Roth character and others. Are they just as vile as we all imagine them to be? Who are these people?
Oh, yeah, they were completely on board with the censorship agenda. And if you read Yoel Roth's article in the New York Times, I analyzed it over at Breitbart as well. You can read my write-up of it. You know, he clearly wants regulators and app stores. You know, he doesn't say it explicitly, but the subtext is that, you know, we won't have to deal with, I think he calls it lawful but awful speech, because we have this huge apparatus of censorship that goes beyond any one company. You know, the coalition of advertisers, regulators, and app marketplaces that will restrain any individual social network that gets too far out of line. So that's his opinion. And, you know, Vijaya Gad was another person who left. She was really, really the top person pushing censorship for a long time at Twitter. She was head of trust and safety when they banned Trump. And, you know, sources say that she was the one who made that call. Jack Dorsey was actually on vacation when they banned Trump, and it was apparently a call made by the Trust and Safety Department.
Okay, now Trump is unbanned. Is he back? Is he coming back? What's he doing?
Well, you can go and see his old classic tweets. All his tweets have repopulated. I'm seeing a lot of bangers retweeted across my feed recently, but he hasn't made any new tweets, and he said he's going to remain on Truth Social, which is the social network he founded. And it's actually doing very well through social. It has huge numbers. So he can certainly get his message out on Truth Social if he wants. Will he resist the temptation to go back to Twitter in the long term, especially as the campaign season gets closer? I think that's an open question.
All right. Alan, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. We got more. The biomedical security state we have in this country that we discovered we had under COVID. We have a doctor coming on. He wrote a book about it. He's got some fascinating things to say. It's going to be pretty eye-opening. Before we get to that, let's open your eyes about the fact you're not stuck in your timeshare. I know you think you are. Maybe even feel stupid. Look, I hear that a lot. Jesse, I feel so dumb. We got the timeshare. I stopped using it. I didn't read the fine print. No one reads all the fine print. You're not stupid. You're human. That's why they give you page after page after page of fine print, because they know you're not going to read it. And now they tell you, sorry, you can't get out. Sorry, you're stuck for life. Pay those annual fees. Pay up. It's time for your annual fees. One phone call. You are one phone call away from freedom. Call Lone Star Transfer. They'll get you out. How do I know? They get 99% of people out. They've helped over 16,000 people get out permanently. One phone call from freedom. They guarantee it in writing. Call 844-310-2646, 844-310-2646, or LoneStarTransfer.com. We'll be back. Joining me now, Dr. Aaron Cariotti, author of the book, The New Abnormal, The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. And I am glad he wrote the book. I hope you read the book, because what happened during COVID in this country, in the world, frankly, was horrific. I hear a lot of people today saying things like, well, we got some things wrong. Things were wrong during COVID. No. This went way beyond wrong. This was tyrannical and evil. Doctor, first, what do you mean, biomedical? What are all these big words? What are you talking about?
So what I call in the subtitle, the biomedical security state, is really the welding together of three things that used to be distinct. The first element is an increasingly militarized public health apparatus. And I describe in detail in the book what I mean by that. That militarized public health apparatus is then wedded to the second element, which is the use of digital technologies for surveillance and control of populations. Think of the vaccine passport. It was rolled out in many places during COVID that required citizens to show a QR code demonstrating that they had done what the public health authorities told them to do, in this case, injecting a novel vaccine into their body that they may or may not have wanted, just to get on a plane, get on a train, go to a restaurant, or re-enter their country of origin. We know now, as was revealed a few months ago when Vice broke the story, that the CDC has been gathering unauthorized data from cell phones to use for tracking compliance with things like lockdowns, school closures, the closures of churches in the United States during COVID. This was done without public notification. It was certainly done without public consent. Most people were not aware that this was happening. Researchers have showed that even though this data was supposed to be de-identified, with only four data points, you can readily identify the specific individual that each of the data points refers to. So this was not anonymized data. It was done without the consent of the American people. The same thing occurred in Canada, even though Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau reassured Canadians that this would not be done in Canada. They did it anyways. So a militarized public health apparatus, the use of digital technologies like smartphones and smartphone-related data, and all of that is backed up by the police powers of the state, creating a regime that is ever more intrusive into the privacy and the health-related decisions and the lives of Americans. I mean, think about during COVID, the sort of micro level on which these controls began to operate. You know, pull your mask up over your nose, this sort of thing. This level of surveillance and control of entire populations for supposed public health purposes has never been done before in human history. And many of the interventions like lockdowns also have never been done before in human history, despite efforts to draw analogies to quarantine measures of the past. Lockdowns were a novel and wholly untested measure that we now know did massive collateral damage without actually achieving their public health purpose of stopping the spread of COVID.
Why? Let's get to that's horrific, and it's all true. How did we get to that point? Like, how did this cabal join together? If America wasn't like that when I was a kid, and it wasn't, why are we like that now? What happened?
So we're starting to see the melding of state and corporate interests. What is called corporatism, or actually coincides with the original definition of fascism put forward by Mussolini and the Italian fascists in the 1930s, which is the melding of state and corporate power. So one example of that is the censorship regime that was deployed during COVID to control the flow of information online and to silence people like me and others who were challenging COVID public health policies. So our audience may have heard of this case, Missouri v. Biden, that was filed by the attorney generals of those two states against senior officials in the Biden administration. And I happen to be one of the private plaintiffs, the four private plaintiffs in that case. And we are alleging that the government was colluding with social media companies like Facebook and Twitter to censor COVID dissenters, COVID policy dissenters, and create a false sense of a scientific consensus around things like lockdowns, vaccine mandates, vaccine passports. Arguably, private social media companies can decide to take people off their platforms, but inarguably, the federal government cannot do that, cannot lean on these companies under the threat of regulation to control the narrative around COVID. But that's our evidence is suggesting that's precisely what they did. One positive development in that case is that the judge recently approved our request to depose Anthony Fauci and several other senior members of the Biden administration, including the Surgeon General, the previous and the current press secretary, Jen Psaki and Jean-Pierre. And I'm not at liberty to say when and where, but Anthony Fauci's deposition has been scheduled for the near future. So that's going to happen very soon. This will be the first time that Fauci and other senior administrative officials will have to answer some pointed and difficult questions under oath with the threat of the penalty of perjury regarding not only their role in pandemic decision-making, but our alleged our allegations claiming that they also collaborated with these private entities to make sure that dissenting opinions were silenced and sidelined.
Should children be getting this jab?
No, there's no reason for healthy children to require a COVID vaccination. Healthy children are not at risk of bad outcomes from COVID. The tiny, tiny handful of cases that have resulted in mortality in children are in children who are very, very sick, the kind of children who could die from the common cold or from influenza. And so COVID, fortunately, this is one of the silver linings in this whole debacle. Fortunately, children are not at high risk from COVID, but we do know that there are risks associated now with the vaccine. So to subject children to any degree of risk, no matter how small, doesn't make any sense unless they can potentially benefit from vaccination. So there's no medical, there's no ethical argument that would support the mass vaccination of children against this particular illness. The other childhood vaccines that we recommend or require of children all protect children against diseases that can potentially harm them, measles and mumps and so forth. But COVID is not one of those diseases. And trying to vaccinate children is an attempt to use children as a sort of shield to protect adults. And a healthy or a sane society doesn't do that. In a healthy or sane society, adults take on risks in order to protect children. So this is getting our ethical bearings sort of totally upside down.
Are we seeing the amount of vaccine injuries that I continue to read? Some of these headlines are amazing. Yep. Is this thing hurting people? Yep.
You know, it is. The best way to cut through a lot of the arguments and a lot of the statistical noise is to look at all-cause mortality data. You can argue about what caused the death of a person, but it's hard to argue with the death certificates and the bodies in the ground. And during the mass vaccination campaign in 2021, we saw a 40% rise in all-cause mortality among people 64 years and younger. And that is a massive upswing in all-cause mortality that has no other reasonable explanation than this massive intervention that we rolled out on a widespread scale. So there's many people looking at this data from health insurance companies, from disability insurance companies, on all-cause mortality in 2021, continuing on into this year. And it's very, very concerning. A 10% rise in all-cause mortality is a 1-in-200-year event, a very, very rare spike. And we're seeing a spike that's four times as large as that, you know, every 200-year type catastrophe that we haven't seen since World War I. Another piece of evidence there, it comes from the data that we got from our FOIA request to the FDA to get the Pfizer data on which the authorization of their vaccine was based. They wanted 75 years to release data that the FDA reviewed in only 108 days. The judge said, no, you have 8 months to release it. We're about to get the last tranche of that data. But what we have so far already shows a huge spike in vaccine adverse events reported to the FDA in the first 3 months following the vaccine rollout. And that includes not just myocarditis, which is the side effect that most people have heard about and that's been investigated most thoroughly, but it includes adverse effects and injuries occurring in many other organ systems as well. And so I worry that the myocarditis is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of potential side effects of this novel intervention.
The book is The New Abnormal. Doctor, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it was eye-opening, wasn't it? Our medical community, obviously it's not all of them. There are so many doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals who pushed back. But man, it woke me up to our medical community. I'll tell you, I don't like going to the doctor now. I don't go much anymore. I've decided I'm going to take better personal care of myself so I can avoid having to go to the doctor. I don't trust them. I don't. I tell you about me taking a male vitality stack from Chalk all the time. Look, that's a big reason why. Natural herbal supplements, 20% increase in my testosterone levels doesn't just keep me, you know, more energy. It keeps me away from the doctor. Ladies, female vitality stack. They have these packs of lit powder, it's called. Lit powder. Get some of this. Put it in your smoothies in the morning. Fill your body with vitamins and minerals. Avoid the doctor. Be healthy enough to avoid the doctor. Chalk is a critical part of that. They've got 35% off subscriptions right now. It's awesome. You have to go to choq.com, promo code Jesse. That gets you 35% off the subscriptions, anything in the store. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. Joe Biden had a birthday yesterday. He turned 80 years old, and boy, he's never looked so sharp. before we get to that, let's get to this really quickly. I get emails all the time. I love that you send me emails, by the way. I'm not complaining, but I get emails to my show all the time. And one of the main themes, because we're always talking about, you know, putting your money where your morals are. Every day is election day because of where you spend your money now that all these companies are full-blown communists. You know, I want to spend my money with people who share my values. And I don't want to spend my money with people who hate me. I know you do too. Jesse, you need to start a list. I get people asking me all the time. Start a website. Give us a list. Where do we go? I don't have to. Public SQ has already done it. This tool already exists. Download Public SQ in your app store. They have a growing, they're adding new businesses every day. They have a growing database of businesses in your area that share your values. Got to go out? The wife's out actually right now. For me, my wife, kids, they're out shopping for things. They have to pick up some things for Thanksgiving coming up. Guess where they went first? Public SQ. Who shares your values? That's how you put your money where your morals are. Download Public SQ in the App Store. All right. Happy birthday, Joe. The Wanderer, courtesy of my buddies at Gravian. Happy birthday, Joe. See you tomorrow.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.